The Time Traveling Robots in Space is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast starts now.
It's Wednesday, August 8th, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Time Traveling Robots in Space, number 42, from the town of Glendale, California. It's Mr. Paul Swickard, and I see here in the notes that you've got a list of Glendalians, famous people from Glendale. Is that what that is?
Indeed it is, sir. I just would like to express to our viewing public or listening public of the caliber of people that are from Glendale. And I just wanted to note a few of these wonderful, wonderful people. and this, folks, if I don't mind saying, is a list. Okay. Nicole Eggert from Baywatch, if you recall that name.
Okay. I'm with you.
Kelly Packard, also from Baywatch. Erica Eleniak, also from Baywatch. Angelo Buonanno Jr., a serial killer convicted of 9 murders. Jason Terrell Taylor, a.k.a. The Game, who is a rapper/musician. 2 members of the band of Good Charlotte. Edward Furlong, you all know him from T2 John Connor. Paul Walker.
Wow.
Nicole Richie, and I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, the icing on this particular cake, Shia LaBeouf, everybody.
Whoa! No, does he say whoa, or wait, or he?
Wait. Maybe I don't know. I haven't really seen anything of his lately, yeah. So I have no idea.
Dark of the Moon is on Netflix streaming. I've been meaning to get around to watching that, but
no, you're not.
I don't have any plans.
All right. All right, thank you, Paul Swickard. Great list. I feel more edumacated now. And our final introduction is from Denton, Texas, Miss Anessa Moyens. How you doing, Anessa?
I am doing good. I don't have anything cool to add like Paul over there, except for my phone likes to time travel.
Oh, let's talk about that. That's a great story. And this is, of course, the Time Traveling Robots in Space. So go ahead, tell the tale.
So I have a really crappy BlackBerry, and it has a tendency of going into this mode where it just constantly thinks, and I often wonder what it thinks about. Like, why am I here? Why did they put me in this piece of crap phone? So anyway, like, it gets to the point where I can't use it. I can't make phone calls or anything, so I have to pull the battery to reset it, and, whenever I put the battery back in and it turns back on, I sometimes get these error messages that the security, whatever, have expired for certain apps. And I decided to look at it one day and I noticed that it said something like May 7th at 8:45 a.m., but it was July at around 6 o'clock at night. And I went into the settings because BlackBerry, or at least this particular BlackBerry, is... one where you have to actually go in and set the time.
Wow. That's old school.
Like, eventually it'll actually, like, set with the network. But the time and the date was, like, 2025.
Nice.
And it did it again, and it went up to 2052. So, 2052.
You know...
It hasn't gone back in time yet, though, so I'm kind of curious.
Those BlackBerry people, they have some confidence.
I wonder if there.
I really do.
I wonder if there's a way to tap in to your phone somehow and make a time machine out of your BlackBerry. Like, actually, you know, harness the process of the time travel that your phone does and actually go forward in time, you know?
That would be really awesome, because I would like to see what it's going to be like in 2052 or 2025.
Maybe we'll have colonies on Mars already.
Maybe. Or maybe we would not exist anymore for some reason. That's Who knows?
Yeah, I'm more glass half full. Sounds like you're more negative and pessimistic, Anessa.
I'm usually not. But when it comes to humans in general, then yeah. I'm more pessimistic.
Just publicly.
Just publicly. I'm a public pessimist.
You're smiling on the inside, frowning on the out.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm smiling on the outside right now. So I'm like, yay, we might not be around by 2052. Yay.
All right. On a lighter note, before we get underway, we do broadcast the show on Google Plus Hangouts on air. And if you're watching us either on your Google Plus stream or on our YouTube channel, feel free to jump over to galacticnetcasts.com/live. We do have a chat room ready for your conversations. Also, speaking of that YouTube channel, when we're not doing podcasts, we also produce these short video things called Sci-Fi Level 3, where we run down three hot stories of the day in the sci-fi or science world. And we do maybe three or four of these a week. So go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. All right, this is the show where we discuss news and other things related to time travel, robots, and space in science fiction and sci-fi. We accomplish this by running down a story, one story from each. We've changed the format just a little bit. Don't freak out. It's just
freaking out, man.
Don't freak out. Calm down.
It's only the end of the world. This is episode 42. You realize this.
I know.
We are changing the format on episode 42.
Hey, it's a
like deja vu.
I just watched.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
I just watched Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So me to watch the movie or read the book or whatever. So
you
should. Yeah.
And he finally watched the movie at least, because we had episode 42, and I usually come up with nicknames for everyone. And because it was 42, all of my nicknames were references to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and Dave didn't get it.
No.
It was very disappointing.
Yeah. I feel very left out. I'm like, what does this mean? I don't know.
So, I don't understand.
Yes.
This week, Brad came up with a nickname, so we'll see if Dave gets any.
Looking forward to this. It's a challenge, man. All right. So, again, like I was saying, we have a story from each topic, time travel, robots, and space. We do a question of the week, and we talk about our picks. For our audio subscribers, like I said before, we do live stream the show on Google Plus Hangouts. If you want to find out when and where, just follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus, and we'll give you the information on that. All right, you guys ready to start?
Let's go.
Yep.
All right.
Sector 1, time travel.
And Paul, you've got the story on time travel this week.
Sweet. A new series for the YouTube network, YOMYOMF. That's YOMYOMF, which stands for, incidentally, You Offend Me and You Offend My Family, is a channel founded by Fast and Furious director Justin Lin, is underway. Now, Justin, by the way, Fast and Furious, yeah, good old Justin Lin. Anywho, just felt the
he's
need
a to great director. He's
quick.
A really good director, actually. He specializes in action and car chases and stuff, and he does a really good job at that.
He directed Fast Five, I believe, and Fast Five was actually a really good action flick. So I will give him that much. So there you go. There, I have given the adequate props to Justin Lin. Anyway, he is developing a new series, and it's a time travel cop show titled Squad 85. Principal photography will begin this week with the series set for a fall premiere. And the whole premise of this, ladies and gentlemen, in a group of 1985 Los Angeles police officers. By the way, just for those of you not in the know, 1985 in Los Angeles has quite the reputation, especially for police officers, that being that they are extraordinarily racist. But hey, you know,
I don't think that they will cover that. I don't think they'll broach that subject in this series. I'm just guessing.
Well, we're going to find out. But anyway, okay. 1985 Los Angeles police officers and transport them 25 years into the future via a secret wave of experimentation undertaken by the LAPD. Now, let me stop you right there. There is no secret experimentation done by the LAPD. It is very obvious what they are doing, both good and bad. There is no extra money to be had for the Los Angeles Police Department.
They don't have any extra cash lying around for time travel experiments?
No. Well, I can tell... I am doing... I actually had to do jury duty last week, and I'm actually having to be on a jury this week. Can't say anything about that, but I can tell you the courthouse needs some help. Yeah, there's no extra money floating around for the state.
You're on jury duty at the Los Angeles County courthouse.
Well, they have the for LA County. There are many, many courthouses.
Okay.
I am in one in downtown Los Angeles.
So
because Glendale is closest to there.
So you're at the what was that 60s cop show? You're at the Dragnet courthouse.
Pretty much.
That iconic building from Dragnet. You're at that.
Yes.
Wow, that's awesome.
I know. But anyway, yeah, I promise you this has nothing to do with time travel, robots, or space. But if anyone wants to, you know, talk about what happened this week, I'm more than happy to say anything you like about that silly case.
All right, so this show looks pretty cool. And I don't did you mention this, that this is a YouTube show? This is not a...
It's a YouTube show, yeah. It's for, again, the YouTube network, You Offend Me and You Offend My Family.
Okay. You know,
founded by Fast and Furious creator Justin Lin.
I am so excited about all the stuff that's coming out via YouTube and just online programming. Like today, the new digital series called, not G+, H+. It's about a not too distant future where the internet gets, you get tied into the internet through your nervous system, so you're actually experiencing the internet in front of you in virtual reality kind of thing.
Okay.
Kind of like the Google Glasses without the Google Glasses.
Sure.
And that's produced by Bryan Singer and distributed by Warner Brothers on YouTube. So this is so exciting that they're doing this show now, and just the very uniqueness of these programs, you know, because I think they have more freedom to experiment a little bit and do more niche programming on YouTube, don't you think?
Sure. Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Like if they're not, it's, you know, it's been clear to me and to a lot of people for the longest time that the big networks don't take a lot of chances with network television. They just don't. It's a lot of the same stuff. So if they have an outlet for trying to create new kinds of content, and they have to do it through a less risky medium like YouTube, then great. I'm all for anything that will get people out of their creative box.
And I think there is an audience for this kind of programming.
Yes, I'd watch it. Had you heard? I hadn't had a chance to read the description. So with the creator, Gregory, I don't know how to say his last name.
Yeah, I'm sure it's some kind of European name. Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, this is how he describes it. The show is really about the aesthetic of the 80s cop show being transplanted in today's world of CSI. These cops don't wait for warrants. They kick the effing door down. Everyone could use a little 80s cop show in their lives.
So Crockett and Tubbs, Miami Vice in the 21st century. That's what I'm getting.
Yeah.
The vibe I'm getting here.
Yeah. Which... Yes. Okay, you've sold me, sir. I am more than willing to give this YouTube episode a shot.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. This fall.
Yeah.
Man, you know what? We're going to be using YouTube a lot. I have a feeling in the coming in the future.
Well, they did a similar thing. I forget who the creator was, but they did a similar thing with the Mortal Kombat series. You're familiar with the movies. Yes.
Yeah. And Jerry Ryan was in. No, was that Mortal Kombat?
Yes, it was.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Jerry Ryan, she was in a... I don't know that they made it directly for YouTube. I think it was a promo video that they were trying to sell to Warner Brothers that they eventually didn't want. But he put it up on YouTube, and it got a lot of positive responses. So as a result, they're making a web series of it, or are in the middle of making it.
And Sci-Fi Channel is going to eventually release that Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome show via online, so it's a very ripe environment for cool shows.
Awesome.
All right. Good job, Paul. Thank you very much. We would like to know what you thought of that first story or any of the things that we talk about. Leave us feedback. Go to contact.galacticnetcast.com, and you'll find all the links, our email address, our voicemail. Everything is right there. contact.galacticnetcasts.com. All right. Let's move on to this right here.
Sector 2.
All right. This is the kind of thing many expect Google to build eventually. A robot. Okay. Because we imagine Google, they're very experimental. They've got the Google Glass. They have the self-driving cars. And you'd think the natural progression is for Google to build their own robot, don't you think? Let's go around the room. Feelings, thoughts on this? Anessa?
I'm surprised they haven't done a robot yet, honestly. I figured that would have come before the car, but I think the car idea more than the robot.
Paul, do you think they're going to do it? Do you think Google's got their eye on a robot?
Oh, they have their minds on everything, so absolutely.
Okay. Well, all right, so don't worry, this is not a big announcement for a new robot product, but Google Science Fair tweeted this week, robots that can think, act, and relate to humans. They even look like us. Are you ready for this? ? And this, again, was tweeted by the Google Science Fair, which I'm not really familiar with. I'm guessing that it's either a strictly online thing or they actually do a real-life Science Fair. Do you know anything about this, either of you?
They do an annual science fair, if I'm not mistaken, like a real-life science fair where they try to get, students or kids more involved with science, and they do have live tweets about the event. And I want to say that last year, I'm sure they did it this year, but I think last year they actually had a live stream on YouTube
of
the science fair.
All right. Awesome. So this is either an idea to put out there to spur young inventors interested in the Google Science Fair, or Google actually has something that they're working on. Or they're looking for people. Maybe they're using the Science Fair to recruit people, you know, with their ideas.
They're recruiting young, kind of like on Eureka.
Yeah.
They think ahead.
Yeah.
I'm more than happy about that.
They have that secret lab where I'm guessing they've got these crazy mad scientists and what's his face? Who's the guy that was doing the Google Glass demonstration at the Google I/O this year? Sergey. I just imagine Sergey's back there, you know, with these crazy scientists working on this wacky stuff. And I'm guessing that they got a robot either in development or they got plans for a robot. I'm just thinking.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Google, they have their hand in so many jars, it's kind of hard to keep track. Like, they have hardware type stuff. They have software type stuff. I guess it would kind of fall naturally that they would try to have some kind of robot.
Yeah. It's a natural, like I said at the top of this article, it's a natural progression for them to actually move into doing robots. So Google Science Fair didn't bother providing additional context. I guess they just want us to know that they have robots on the mind. There are plenty of astonishing and terrifying things happening with robots, even without any aid from Google. But it's interesting to contemplate how robots might fit into Google's agenda, considering products like the driverless car, Google Glass, and Google Now. I'm sure you can envision some thought-provoking concepts from Google. I see Google looming large in our future. You know, I don't see them going away anytime soon.
Are people starting? Well, I don't know. I guess I should just ask you guys. Is it to that scary point for you yet? Is this too much? Is this Google like, I don't like how much you know about me?
It's not really to that point yet, because otherwise I would quit going online and doing stuff. And I use Google like every day, so.
Well, that's kind of my point. Who doesn't, you know?
Exactly, like, yeah. But yeah. I guess a lot of people don't think about how much information that, you know, Google can keep tabs on with what they're doing, searching for, conversing, emailing, and whatnot. So
I have nothing to hide. So I'm not worried about Google taking my information and using it. I know what they're using the information for. It's to serve up better ads. That's the only thing they're doing with the information. They're not trying to find secrets on you, and they're not going to like blackmail you sometime in the future. They're using it to serve up a better ad experience.
Yeah. I will say that I do like their ads in Gmail. Whenever you go to the spam emails, they'll give you ads for like spam recipes.
Really? Actual spam recipes?
Actual spam recipes. So it'll be like spam burgers and spam fajitas. And
that is awesome.
That's a good point. I kind of feel bad for the spam people. You know, it's not their fault.
No, it's not.
No. But yeah, it's just kind of funny. When you go to delete the spam folder, they'll actually have at the top a little spam recipe for you.
Sweet.
So I like Google's sense of humor.
I'm guessing it's some kind of inside joke. They did that on purpose, I'm sure.
Well, because you think of spam, you either think of junk mail in your inbox or you think of like the lunch meat in a can. So.
Yep. Exactly.
I think it was just logical to toss the two together.
So let me ask you guys this. How do you envision a Google robot? Knowing what the products they've put out already, how do you think they'll do it differently? Or what would their robot be like?
Informative.
Yeah. Like a robot customized to my liking. That is what I envision. I'm like, it remembers what I've searched for in the past.
And it will offer me tea just the way I like it.
Honestly, I mean, I've used comparisons like this before. It almost sounds like the iRobot kind of robot, like a robot that actually acknowledges you and like remembers things about you and just kind of understands your habits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, for Paul, it's going to be a game machine too. You're going to be able to.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Ugh. You've blown my mind, Dave.
would you like to play a game, Paul?
Okay. No. You can't do that.
I like the arm motion.
Yeah. Okay. If it came up to me and says, "Would you like to play a game?" I would say emphatically no.
This will not end well.
You don't want to play a global thermonuclear war?
No. How about a nice game of chess? Okay. Are we sure we're playing chess right now? Like, for sure? Okay, good.
Let's play Go Fish.
Oh, the possibilities are endless. I'm looking forward to our future with Google and Google's robots. All right, so there
what
you go.
What do you call it?
What?
Googlebot?
Gbot?
Yeah, let's talk about the name for a second. What would a Google robot be called? Goober?
Yeah.
Goober.
Rugal?
Rugal. I'm guessing there's a...
It sounds kind of like arugula or something.
Rugula. Yeah, it kind of does.
I don't know.
Roboa Google. No, I don't know.
Let's take a look at their other products.
Robugle.
Okay, Gmail... Well, Google,
right.
Google Plus, Feed, no.
Oh, so maybe this is Google Plus.
Yeah.
Google Plus Bot.
Or Google Mobile, you know?
Maybe they should just call it Spam. G-Spam.
G-Spam.
That robot would have the worst self-esteem ever if they were called that.
I don't want to give this robot self-esteem.
Nobody wants me.
They all want to throw me away.
All right, interesting. All right, so let's move on before we get to space. I've
that was Dave, folks. That was all Dave. I don't know why he decided to do that, but...
I don't know.
That's his thoughts on space.
Yeah, that's the story this week. That's all we're doing is...
Yeah, because nothing incredible happened in space.
Nothing happened in space. Of course not. Yeah. At all.
What I was confused because the commercial was way down here, and I had to move it up here at the very, very beginning. So I apologize. All right, the time traveling robots in space is brought to you by Audible.com. For you, the Galactic Netcast listener, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to test drive their service. To go along with the theme of this podcast and to celebrate the landing of the Mars Curiosity rover, which we're about to talk about, may we suggest Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson. Have either of you guys read Red Mars?
I have not.
No.
Because I'm lame.
It's the first in a series of books. It's Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, I believe. And here's the synopsis of it. An international group of scientists have colonized Mars, leaving Earth forever. These 100 people have traveled 9 months to reach their new home. This is the remarkable story of the world they create and the hidden power struggles of those who want to control it. Although it is fiction, Red Mars is based on years of research as living spaces and greenhouses multiply. An astonishing panorama of our galactic future rises from the red dust. So there you go. That is our recommendation this week in honor of the Mars Curiosity rover. It's Kim Stanley Robinson's Red Mars. To download that or anything that you want as your free pick, go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, audibletrial.galacticnetcasts for your free audiobook. And we thank Audible for their support of the Time Traveling Robots in Space. All right. Anessa has the space story. You've got the biggest story of the week, Anessa. Go ahead.
Space is always big. As most of us know, the Mars Science Laboratory, aka the Curiosity rover, has made a successful landing on Mars late Sunday night, early Monday morning, and started sending back pictures minutes after arriving. But since this is the subject of space, let's talk about the other thing that happened during this mission. The high-rise camera on board the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter acquired an image of Curiosity's epic descent to the Martian surface. That image was originally scheduled to be released at NASA's morning press conference, but Spaceflight 101 and Discover magazine reported that the photo had been leaked out early. The image shows the rover descending towards the surface of the planet via its massive supersonic parachute. In the picture, which was taken 6 minutes after MSL entered the atmosphere, you can see the lines on the parachute and the hole in the top. Before the rover's arrival, HiRISE had taken over 120 pictures of Gale Crater. Scientists had previously predicted a 60% chance of capturing a photo of MSL during its descent to the Martian surface.
This is
awesome.
This is like the coolest story of the week. I thought the Mars Curiosity rover landing was the cool story of the week. I think this tops it because they had a 60% chance of getting the shot. This is like the shot of a lifetime. They had to plan for this. They had to know where to be pointing their camera. It had to be, this is a highly coordinated effort, and they got a beautiful shot. If you haven't seen this picture yet, you need to check it out because it almost looks like it's a painting. It's
amazing.
Yeah. It's surreal.
So, it is.
So it's one spacecraft taking a picture of another spacecraft orbiting a planet millions of miles away.
Approved.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing. So did you guys stay up? Well, Paul, you probably didn't have to stay up that much that late because you're 2 hours behind me and Anessa. But Anessa, did you stay up for the Curiosity landing Monday morning?
Unfortunately, I could not because I was visiting my parents that weekend.
Okay. And, priorities.
Here's the other thing too, though, is I don't have internet access at my parents' house. So I stayed up as late as I could reading tweets until I absolutely had to go to sleep because I had to drive my 8 hour or so drive back to Denton the next day. So I wanted to be awake at the wheel.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing.
So I did have my priorities, and I figured I would just catch up on Monday to see if it actually landed safely. Because I know Brad had posted on Facebook that he had a gut feeling that Curiosity rover wouldn't land safely. So luckily he was wrong.
Yeah. It was flawless. There was no problem at all. And I can't believe how, like, by the numbers and, like, effortless it looked like the whole process was. And the funny thing is, it was on the surface for, like, 14 minutes before they got the indication that it was actually on the surface. That's how far away Mars is.
But it's still quicker than we get the Olympic updates from NBC.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
That's the best meme of the week, is the whole...
Yes.
The delay for curiosity is still shorter than NBC's delay of the Olympics. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's awesome stuff. But, yeah, it was just amazing. And unfortunately, I couldn't really catch all of it. But just reading what everyone had to say and the recap. And it really makes me happy that there were so many people that were actually interested in watching.
A lot of people, right?
Yeah, and it's not something that I'm really used to, because sometimes it's kind of hard to get people excited about space and about science. Mm-hmm. And so to see that much enthusiasm from people that you normally don't see enthusiastic about science or space in general, was really great. And so I really hope that people still keep that enthusiasm about space and about science, and it just wasn't people jumping on the let's be cool and talk about the Mars rover bandwagon.
Sure.
So,
well, what's...
Yeah, have you guys seen that video of how the rover actually landed? It's not real, like, in the sense that it was something else took a picture of it, but yeah, the video rendering of what actually happened.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's amazing that this everything worked, because it had a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, the thing was like in, what is it, 20 stages or something like that, and it wasn't like last time that, I don't know if you all remember, you probably all remember this, but the last time it landed, it was covered in like balloons, essentially. And it just bounced around for a little while. This time was like a full blown, like, robots detaching themselves and like big giant parachutes and things.
Mm-hmm. No, it was too big for that. It was too, because this thing is 1 ton. So they couldn't make an airbag big enough to actually, for that to work. So they had to figure out a different way of doing this. And I learned all this stuff from watching Twit's coverage of this Sunday night. They had the engineer on who actually came up with this, with the idea for the sky crane. Because what happened was the Curiosity went through space in a space capsule or a spaceship, and then it went into orbit. I think something detached from it before it entered orbit.
Right.
And then the parachute opened. And then the heat shield came off, and then the rover actually detached from that part of the spaceship, fired up its own engines.
Uh-huh.
And then, no, that's the sky crane. That's the sky crane.
The crane is the thing that actually lowers the rover down to the surface.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's literally hovering there as this thing is descending from the crane.
Yeah.
And then it takes off again.
Yeah.
If you could see that in a science fiction movie and be totally blown away. Yeah. And this is real.
Yeah. And wouldn't you have loved to be on the surface and watched that happen? You know?
If I were the Martians, dude, I'd be freaked out of my mind. I'm like, holy crap, who are these people?
What's going? Something serious is going down, and I don't like it.
Do not want.
Have you guys seen the video taken from Curiosity of the whole process?
I have not seen that yet.
There's two videos going around. One that follows the whole process down, and then the one I saw today was of just the heat shield coming off. Like, the video starts with just blank. There's nothing there because the heat shield is on. And then the heat shield comes off and you're exposed to the sun, and you look down and you see the surface of Mars. It's pretty spectacular.
That's awesome.
Indeed.
So, yeah. Looking forward to many more days, weeks, and years. This is a 2-year mission, right?
Yes, I believe so. Although I could be wrong.
Is that right? They launched this in a 2-year mission in one sense, Dave, that they already had launched had launched it 2 years ago?
No,
or
they launched it last November. It's going to be on the surface doing its thing for 2 years. Minimum of 2 years. Because remember, the other two rovers, what's their names again?
Was it Opportunity and...
Yeah, Spirit.
Spirit.
They lasted.
What batteries were they using?
They were using.
I want to know that because their batteries must be kick ass.
They were solar.
They were solar powered.
Yeah,
they didn't think they would last nearly as long as they did. Because they were expecting them to last, what, a year maybe?
Yeah,
a few months.
Yeah.
And then after the Martian winter, they're like, oh, that's probably going to be it. But then once that ended and there was ample sunlight, like the little rover just kicked in and kept on working.
Yep.
Wow.
And it lasted way longer than they expected them to. So.
And Curiosity has a nuclear. It's nuclear powered. So we'll see how long that lasts.
Huh.
So.
All right. Thank you, Inessa. Great job. We have a new feature on the show. It's called the Crazy Robot Video of the Week. Are you guys ready for the real life Wally robot?
I am. And if this is going to be a regular segment, then we really need an especially cool bumper for this one.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
All right.
I can only do so many things, Paul. Give me a break.
Well, Dave's famous now, so he's probably too good for us.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We'll never see him again.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Something happened today online. We didn't talk about this yet, but I got an offer from Chris Perillo. Of course, a lot of people know who Chris Perillo is. You guys are familiar with Chris.
Ish.
Obviously.
I know the name, yes.
Yeah. He said he asked me if I wanted to produce videos for his channel on YouTube. Which, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I love how just nonchalant you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so, you know. Really
whatever. Right. So if our listenership, I don't know, quadruples in the next month, you'll know why.
Yeah. All right, let's stay on task here, guys. Don't get too distracted, all right?
The only thing more I'll say, Dave, is don't forget about the little people who helped you get to where you are. And
I would never forget about you guys. You're my friends. Come on. All right, so real-life Wally robot. Having built a working R2-D2 in 2002, Mike Senna, a California robot fan and hobbyist, set out to build a full-scale working Wally robot. Based on the 2008 movie, Wally is a life-size version of a robot that never actually existed. Remember, it was an animation movie. It was all computer-generated, and the actual Wally robot never existed. So what they had to do is they had to go through screen grabs and posters to figure out the dimensions and scale and all that stuff. Senna, who has a full-time job, spent 25 hours a week on this endeavor. Can you guys imagine that? Your job, your life, and then 25 hours of working on this robot.
Good on him, dude. Yeah. He must really love making robots.
Well, he did R2-D2 first, so, you know, you almost have to think that.
Yeah.
All right, so the result is a real-life version of Wally that, as the video illustrates, can wave, move, hunch his shoulders and elicit the same sounds as the movie character.
Huh.
So you guys ready to watch this? I'm going to try my screen share here.
Hang on.
Let me see how this works. I have to pick the right one. Where is it? Oh, the joys. Here we go.
Oh, internet. Oh, technology. How you have just done things.
All right, here we go. This is it right here.
Hey guys, I'm Norm. I'm here at Maker Faire 2012 with Mike McMaster and Mike Senna, two members of the Wally Builders Club. So as you can guess, they build life-size Wally machines. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
These look amazing. The movie came out in 2008, and it seems like you guys have been building these before the movie started. How did that whole thing start?
We're an offshoot of the R2-D2 Builders Club. And in October of 2007, there was sort of a joke on our board about, oh, there's this new movie, Wally, we should get into that robot. So Scott Washburn started the club, and it's a Yahoo group, in October of 2007. And we went from there, and we spent the last 4 years studying screen grabs, collecting information. Spent really the last 2 years actually building the Wallys.
Well, did you have help from... It was all screen grabs, or did you have any of the design blueprints from Pixar?
No, it was mostly screen
grabs. All right, I'm going to move ahead of here a little bit here.
Masters of that.
There
and,
it is.
Yay!
And so you guys collaborated on the design, but so they're similar, but they're very unique to your own design.
Exactly.
All right, so that's the video right there, and we're going to post that in the links in the show notes of the podcast. So there you go. You guys pretty
that's
impressed.
Awesome.
You guys pretty impressed by that?
Yes, definitely. He did a really awesome job in recreating Wall-E from screenshots. So
yeah,
it looks legit. It looks like Pixar borrowed that rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they saw that thing in real life and animated it.
And it's crazy that it's something that never existed outside of this art, you know? And this is actual real. You can touch it and feel it and it works, you know?
Well, I guess that kind of goes to Pixar's credit. You can, you know, they can build something that is structurally stable that looks like what they had originally envisioned for the character. So I guess we now know it's possible that you could build, that future could exist, I suppose.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, good on all these guys. Wait a second. I just said good on. That's Paul. Paul says that. Why did I say that?
I do?
Yeah, you say,
do I say that?
Yeah, you say good on a lot.
Oh, I had no idea. Is that bad? Should I stop doing that?
Is this my whatever?
That's your thing. Keep it up.
Yeah, everybody has to have a thing, and that's your thing, so keep it up. Just like
this is our first podcast intervention, folks. So good on everyone here, and we'll move on.
All right, so there you go. That's our crazy robot video of the week. If you have a request, if you find one online, please send it to us. Make us aware of it. You can send it. Send us the link. Email galacticnetcast@gmail.com or mention us on Twitter or let us know on Facebook. Give us the link and we'll feature your crazy robot video of the week in the time traveling robots in space.
And there are plenty.
Oh yeah, every week there's a ton of them. You can listen to all of the Galactic Netcast shows on Stitcher Smart Radio. It's a great app for your iPhone. If you have an Android, BlackBerry, Android tablet, or the Nook, you can get it. If it's a smart device of any kind, basically, Stitcher has an app for it. It is smart radio for your device. You can find it in your app store or go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts. Enter the promo code galacticnetcasts, and there you go. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And we thank Stitcher for their support of the time-traveling robots in space. All right, it's time for our picks. And Paul, you are first.
I'd be more than happy to. And at the risk of being redundant this evening. Here we are. Topical, folks. Topical. I am going to recommend the original Total Recall film. The Schwarzenegger film. The Get Your Ass to Mars. That whole thing. As most people know, Total Recall came out, the new one, the remake, as it were, came out last week. And I wanted to recommend the original because I hadn't seen the new one.
And just as a point here, my recommendation is the remake. So we're getting both sides here. This is awesome. I'm glad
to see. I totally didn't do Total Recall, so just throwing that out there.
It's funny because Inessa actually watched a movie called Recall Total. It's just a weird...
Total coincidence, folks.
Yep.
Yep.
So go ahead, Paul. Let's talk
about it. Absolutely. Most of you guys know this film. It was made in, when was it made? I don't know.
1990.
Oh, 1990, that's correct. Thank you, Dave. Original budget of $60 million. Box office, $261 million. So there you go. And as most people know, this is based on a Philip K. Dick novel called We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
So what was your favorite part of the movie, Paul?
Favorite part. I like the part when he tries to get through customs. When he first gets to Mars.
2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly right. I thought that part was pretty cool. One thing that people should know about this, it's really violent, and I was not ready for that. Like, it's very bloody, and the current remake is PG-13, so it's not anywhere close to what this was. But yeah, Michael Ironside, good on him. Sharon Stone, also good on her. And I thought it was a very enjoyable movie. Plus, don't laugh at me, Anessa.
Just because
I realize that
she's
okay.
Hearing it.
Yes,
now.
I'll stop.
See, I won't laugh. Sorry.
I'm sorry for bringing it up. I didn't. It just came out.
I blame Dave.
No, I guess we should summarize it. This movie is based around a miner, essentially. He's a driller. I don't know what the technicality of his occupation is, but he is kind of obsessed with the idea of going to Mars, even though Mars itself is kind of, they portray it as a very unfun place to be. It seems like more of a mining colony than like a place you'd want to go visit. And what one organization advertises that they can do is they essentially implant memories into people's brains about having done something without ever actually doing it. So in that whole process, a whole bunch of things unfold, and he begins to question his own reality, and things happen. Let's just say that's a good starting point.
And there's great. I the one thing I love about the original is the mutant aspects. Because on Mars, one of the things is all the workers, all the whatever they are, whatever they're doing, mining, they're miners, I think, or whatever.
Right.
People working, the hardworking people of Mars are exposed to radiation because the company that the evil antagonist in the movie runs mm-hmm. is, one of the things is they didn't make good enough shields. So they
sure.
let all this radiation in, and there's some like deformities, like of course, and this is no spoiler because I think most people have seen the original. One of the there's a group of people on Mars that are fighting back, and the leader of this insurgent group, what was his name again?
Quado.
Yeah, he is two people in a sense because
right.
he's one guy, but then he has another little guy in his stomach.
Yeah, that part was gnarly. The director of this film's name is Paul Verhoeven. He's big on if y'all have seen a lot of his films. He's very big on having a company or kind of a corporation have way too much power than it should. Like he loves doing that kind of thing. Like just to give you an example, he's also done Total Recall. He's also done. Starship Troopers. He's big on that whole kind of, he loves his, he kind of takes his parodies pretty seriously. So yeah,
did he
likes doing this kind of film.
Did he do RoboCop?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yeah. RoboCop was actually before Total Recall. It was made in 87.
So they're basically remaking all the Paul Verhoeven movies because RoboCop's coming out next year.
So, okay, let's look into the future. What can we look forward to? Basic Instinct remake? Showgirls remake? Oh, that sounds freaking great. Starship Troopers remake?
Yep.
Hollow Man remake. And that's about where that ends.
There's a lot. I did a Spreecast this week with Glenn Rubenstein, and it was about the remake, the Total Recall remake. But we got into all the remakes that are coming up. And I found a website of 50 movies that are remakes that are in development. 50.
Wow.
Dude.
I know.
Okay, there are so many great movies that I would love to see remade. I don't know, man. This kind of gets into murky territory for me because I can think of all kinds of films that I would love to see remade, but I'm afraid they're going to screw it up.
Like Ryan Reynolds as Connor McLeod in the Highlander remake. I'm not sure about that.
For instance, yes.
He can't be any worse than what's his face.
But Ryan Reynolds is very much like the pretty boy. I think Connor McLeod needs to be more of a...
He's very gruff.
Yeah.
He's scruffy.
Yeah, scruffy.
Well, he's supposed to be scruffy, but I didn't think oh man, I can't think of his name for some reason. Like the guy who played Connor McLeod, he wasn't really scruffy. He was also a pretty boy who couldn't do a Scottish accent. So I don't think that Ryan Reynolds would be much worse than...
They could...
What's his face?
they could make him scruff, I guess. I guess it's, I don't know, maybe it's harder to make a pretty boy scruffy than the other way around. Ryan Reynolds in the third Blade movie, he was pretty, I mean, he wasn't supposed to be the pretty boy. But I who knows what he'll be in this next movie.
Yeah, Christopher Lambert, that's right.
Yeah, Christopher Lambert, and Brad's in the chat room. He said Adrian, it's Adrian Paul. He played Duncan MacLeod in the TV.
He was also... pretty. Although he had kind of the stubble going on.
But there's so many great like British, like UK actors that could have played this role, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, they could have had Sean Connery play the Highlander.
Didn't he retire? Connery's out.
But I mean, probably. And the original.
But I mean, in the original, because they had Sean Connery that was a Spaniard from Egypt who had a Scottish accent.
Yeah, what the? He had a better Spanish accent or Scottish accent than Connor did.
Well, you see, Dave, he does this little thing called acting.
Whatever. All right, so there you go. There's Paul's pick, the original Total Recall. And, of course, we'll have a link on the picks page at galacticnetcast.com. If you want to buy the DVD portion of the proceeds, if you buy it through Amazon, through our portal, we'll go towards Galactic Netcasts. All right. Let's move on to Anessa. What is your pick?
Are you sure you don't want to continue with Total Recall?
No, I think we need a break between Total Recalls. So,
all right.
You're the buffer.
Now for Recall Total. Just kidding. I picked an episode of the TV show called Better Off Ted. If you're not familiar with Better Off Ted... It lasted for 2 seasons, unfortunately. It's a really great show. It's a comedy. And it's about this guy named Ted, who's the head of a research department for a company called Viridian Dynamics. And so each episode, they have different issues regarding what Viridian's doing or its employees. So anyway, in this particular episode, it's season 2, episode 5, called The Great Repression. And... Linda and Ted face sexual harassment charges from an overreacting coworker, Veronica. But Veronica, which is their boss, her solution to the problem creates creates unexpected complications. So she gets the idea to say that the sexual harassment is a disease, much like alcoholism. And so as long as people agree to go to therapy, they can't get fired for sexually harassing other coworkers. But anyway, that's not, I guess, the point. It's dealing with Lem and Phil, who work down in one of the labs. They have these little robots that come out and actually clean up their mess. So it's like a little Roomba. It cleans up chemical spills. But Viridian has decided to get rid of the robots and replace them with people because having people... come along and mop up the spills is cheaper than maintaining the robots. And so the robot gets replaced. I think they call it Chumby, if I remember.
Oh, God. That sounds like an actual robot that we've talked about on this show before. I swear to God.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the name of the robot, but it gets retired. And Phil and Lem are told that it gets sent to a robot farm where it can go and play with other robots, when in reality it gets sent to like the second basement and gets torn apart and the parts are recycled for other things. And that part of the episode is Phil and Lem trying to get this robot back and reassemble it and have it replace the guy with the mop, Carlos. And they end up finding out that, you know, having a guy with a mop, like, isn't so bad whenever things don't quite work out with bringing the robot back, because bringing things back from the dead very seldom work. So.
No, it never works. Never, ever works. Frank and Weenie, the dog is going to kill the kid. I swear, I think that's what's going to happen.
It's going to be like Pet Cemetery.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a really funny episode, and I highly recommend the episode. Well, I highly recommend the TV show in general because it's a really funny show. There's a lot of dirty references, and in this episode, there's even a Dalek in the robot farm or the basement.
Though. Is it obvious, or is it you have to really look for it?
Oh, no, it's straight up obvious. They walk into the lab or the basement, and there's this Dalek, and then he walks up to the shelf, and half the screen is this Dalek in the background. So it's really obvious to see. It's not a blink and you miss it kind of thing.
Well, you know what, Anessa? Me and you are going to be fighting for the Asylum of the Daleks, that episode of Doctor Who coming up this season for our pick.
I love Daleks, and I have a couple of little Daleks, so. But if you want it, you can have it.
Incidentally, just to bring this full circle, this is also having to do with making fun of corporate culture, because Better Off Dead is all about making fun of corporate people.
Yes.
Awesome. I've never seen this show. I need to watch it.
You need to sit down and watch it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Right after this podcast, after you get everything up and online, you need to sit down and watch
some There's episodes. So many damn shows that I'm supposed to watch that I haven't watched.
I know the feeling, dude. I know the feeling. In fact, it's kind of funny. Like, I'm pretty sure the only place that you can get the second season of Better Off Dead is on Netflix right now. Like, right. I tried to look for it not too long ago, and I don't think you can even buy it.
Maybe eventually it'll come out on DVD.
I hope so, because that really needs to be seen.
It does. It needs to be seen and enjoyed by all, repeatedly.
For all of humanity. All right. Thanks, Anessa. Great job. Better Off Ted, The Great Repression. I'm going to have to watch that here soon. All right. So, bringing it full circle again, my pick this week is the remake of Total Recall.
Good job.
Thank you. And I wanted to bring this up during your discussion, Paul, but
okay.
I really wish that this new Total Recall would have actually gone to Mars, because, I mean, how perfect would that have been, you know, to have the
that's a good point.
Curiosity rover landing on the same weekend that Total Recall opens. I mean,
well, that's that would have been amazing. But you know, of course, these decisions, these production decisions were made long ago, and I'm sure they didn't even, like, that hadn't even occurred to them.
Yep. Oh, good. I'm still here. Google wasn't sure if I was still here. I had to say yes. I'm still here.
You're still here, dude.
All right. So, Total Recall, based on the 1990 film of the same name, which we just talked about, and the 1966 short story, We Can Remember It For You, Wholesale. And going into this, I thought that this was going to be based more on the short story. But after some research, we did a comparison on the Spreecast that we did with Glenn yesterday. He actually read the synopsis of the short story, and the short story seemed more in line with the 1990 version for some reason. I thought this remake was more loyal to the short story, but I think it's the other way around. I don't know.
During all the press stuff I've heard, they kept saying, I forget who it was. Who was the main female protagonist?
Well, there was two.
The good one. The good one, in quotes.
Yeah, hang on. She was in that TV show. Jessica Biel. Jessica Biel.
Thank you, Jessica Biel. I saw her in an interview on The Daily Show, and she had mentioned that it was more faithful to the novel.
Yeah, after reading the synopsis of the story, it's not that faithful to the original story. Okay, they don't go to Mars on this one. Instead, it contains political overtones. The film blends Western and Eastern influences together due to the fact that the two nation states, United Federation of Britain and the colonies, and the colony are battling for political power. So basically, in this version of Total Recall, the Earth is not habitable. Like, there's only two places on the planet where people can live. It's Great Britain and Australia. And how they get to each other, they go through the center of the Earth. They do a thing called the drop, where they actually drop into the ground or into Earth, and halfway through the planet, they do this whole gravitational shift. It's pretty awesome how it works. And I'm really glad that they incorporated that, because it's a very unique mode of transportation to actually go through the center of the Earth to get to the other side of the planet. I don't think it ever could be done, but in science fiction, it's a pretty cool concept.
So how does it work with the core?
They go through the core.
So the molten core, they figured out a way to survive.
Yeah. Well, weird. No. I think they get to the core almost, and then they go around it. Because Britain and Australia aren't on opposite ends. So they have to, it's not exactly all the way through. They have to do a turn at some point. I don't know.
All right.
So it was directed by Len Wiseman and stars Colin Farrell, Kate Beckinsale, Jessica Biel, Bryan Cranston, John Cho, and Bill Nighy. By the way, all the British actors in this have an American accent. Like Bill Nighy, I had never heard him with an American accent, and it was weird to hear.
Did he do okay? I'm curious.
No, he did a great job.
Great.
And it's funny because Kate Beckinsale, guess who she's married to?
In real life?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Len Wiseman. She only stars in his movies because he does all the Underworld movies.
You got it right. Underworld.
Okay. Yeah. The reason that she does those movies is because they're married, and it's like a favor to him. She doesn't really do that many movies otherwise.
Huh.
Yeah, it's weird.
All right.
It's kind of like Helena Bonham Carter and what's his face?
whatever his name is. Shoot. I'm normally the one who remembers these things.
Names.
Welcome to my world.
We're pulling a Dave.
Yeah.
crap.
But it's a cool relationship that they have that arrangement worked out. I mean, it seems like a loving relationship if they can work together that way, you know.
I'm a bit more pessimistic about high-profile relationships, but sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like they've been together for a while now, so it's working. Maybe that's how they can keep it together is because they only work. Their relationship only works when they work together. You know. I don't know.
Tim Burton, by the way.
Tim Burton, thank you. Right. I knew it was something stupid. Sorry.
All right.
So, I knew it was something easy.
Okay. So the reason that I picked this movie, obviously because it was a big movie that came out this weekend, but there was robots in this movie. And one of the plot lines is Quaid, which is the main character, played originally by Arnold Schwarzenegger, works in a factory that makes robots. How ass backwards is that? Humans making robots.
That is very strange. What crazy world is this?
Well,
isn't the future. This is the now. I'm calling foul, Dave.
No, because this is not now, because our factories, robots make things. In the future, apparently, humans make robots. Maybe that's the law. Maybe it's against the law for robots to make robots, because that would be kind of weird.
There are so many things that I could say. It's like, hey, start off, hey, you're not allowed to procreate with other robots.
Yeah, yeah, it's a weird, you know.
This is how it starts.
Incestuous thing, yeah. So, yeah, this remake was okay. I mean, I didn't think it was as good as the original. A lot of action, a lot of running, a lot of chases. It had, because the way these cities worked were, it was such a small space that they had to build up. So there's the main city that started at the ground, and it all mm-hmm. went, and they just built up. And there's all these levels, and there was a couple of chases where they were actually jumping from level to level. So a lot of cool visuals. It's a very good looking movie, and they do it. They do the special effects really well. And there's hover cars in this film, but they're not typical hover cars that you see in other movies. Like, they're not using anti-gravity. They're actually using magnets. It's magnetized hover cars. So it's either, they're either floating like this, like over the road or under the road. They're using magnets on both sides, which is kind of, because one scene, to elude the cops, they have to actually disengage the magnet and they drop to the ground, which is pretty crazy. Yeah.
How do they work?
I don't know. Anyways, so that's, you know,
future.
Story's okay, a lot of action. that's what it has going for it, is the action and the visuals in this movie. It's a pretty movie.
Good deal. So worth the watch.
Yeah, I'd go see it. I wasn't disappointed. It's not the best movie. You're not going to regret that you went to see it. But it's not a great movie. So, you know, maybe if you're very picky about the films you see, wait for it on DVD and Blu-ray, you know.
All right.
All right, there you go. Those are our picks to review. I talked about the remake of Total Recall. Anessa talked about the Better Off Ted episode, Season 2, Episode 5, The Great Repression. And Paul had the original 1990 Total Recall movie. Go to galacticnetcast.com and pick up our picks. I'm sure that we'll be able to put the original Total Recall and the Better Off Ted episodes on the picks page. Buy them through our link, and a portion of the proceeds goes to help the Galactic Netcast Network fund us. Also, while you're on the website, don't forget to follow us on the social networks, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and subscribe to the Time Traveling Robots in Space by going to subscribe.galacticnetcasts.com. All right, one final business. Question of the week. You guys ready for this?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And I okay, good, Paul. I'm glad that I saw you changed your answer.
Well, I saw the discussion. I was like, okay, well, we need to actually get – let's answer the question that David's asking.
It was a little bit confusing, so I won't go into that. It'll bore the listeners. Let's just ask the question. So after we finally have a successful manned mission, like we sent all these rovers, like this week, what's it called again?
Curiosity. Yeah. I was like, what is the question, Dave?
I'm confusing myself.
I don't know.
Since Curiosity landed this week, we've had a bunch of unmanned missions. But after our first successful manned mission to Mars, what do you think is going to be the next space mission? Paul.
Oh, goodness. Like I said, I think that having a Venus one would be amazing, though I'm not sure it's possible.
Not really.
From what I hear, it's not much of a surface, as it were.
Because Venus's surface is always changing because there's a lot of volcanic activity.
Right.
And it's pretty consistent at 855 degrees Fahrenheit. And there's a lot of pressure. So initially, whenever we sent the probes, I guess like the Venera probes, they couldn't withstand the pressure. So within a few minutes of ending up in the atmosphere, they would end up, you know, basically not work anymore and become part of the Venetian surface. So lot of what we know about the surface is actually mapped through radar technology. So,
and that anyway, is just, and that's just orbit.
Right.
That's not even like anywhere close to the surface in quotes.
Right, because the probes don't last as long. I think we've gotten maybe pictures before. It's been a while since I've really talked about Venus. But yeah, like I said, a lot of what we know about the surface is done through radar technology. So we just send out a signal, it comes back, we map it. So.
But we could go to its orbit. I don't know.
I mean, we can orbit Venus. But of course, it's already spinning in the wrong direction really slow. And so it's like global warming gone wild. And its day is longer than its year.
What?
I didn't realize that was so wanky or weird.
Wait. You're going to have to explain that.
The idea is a large object came and hit Venus and caused it to spin in the opposite direction from what we're spinning in. And so it's spinning at a slower rate than it orbits the sun. And so I think its year is like 243 days. I have to look up the year.
Day
is literally longer than its year.
Wow. So it will go around the sun before it will turn fully.
Right.
Weird. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I didn't know that either.
Let me look up the...
That's pretty sweet, though. I like that. Good job, Vanessa. This is why we have you here, because there's no way I would have figured that out.
So there you go. Venus orbits every 224.7 Earth days. And let me see. Venus day.
I heard that Mercury is actually more habitable than Venus is. Like, we'd be better off going to Mercury than Venus.
Well, if you hung out on the side that wasn't really facing the sun, then yeah, probably. It has, if I remember correctly, it has a little bit of a atmosphere, but the atmosphere kind of goes away periodically. so it doesn't have much of an atmosphere, but temperature-wise, it goes from one extreme to the other, just depending on which side of the sun it's facing, because it is pretty close to the sun.
Today, we're looking for a high of 95, but look for the atmosphere to disappear at about 12:05, and at that point, it's going to be 200 Kelvin.
Yeah, I could totally be wrong about the whole atmosphere thing, because like I said, it's been a while since I've talked about any planetary any planetary stuff. I don't get to teach this stuff anymore, so I tend to forget.
We should do a feature. Planetary Talk with Anessa Moines.
Planetary Talk. Yay!
I would totally listen to that show.
Yeah,
good you? Job.
I can talk about planets.
All right, let's stay on Anessa then. What's your answer to the question?
Sorry. I was trying to find out how long a year. Maybe I got my year and my day mixed up. But anyway, my idea, or what I think would happen next once we actually have a successful manned mission to Mars, is to establish a presence on Mars, maybe like a little base, a central location, so that way we can actually go and more efficiently explore other planet satellites, because obviously you're not going to land on the surface of Venus, or not Venus, but Jupiter or Saturn or Pluto or Uranus, because they're all gas giants, so there's not really a surface to land on. But they do have moons, and
yeah,
they have a lot of moons, some of them do, and so I think having a central location would make it easier for us to explore the other satellites, rather than having to come back to Earth and then go all the way back out to Jupiter and or Saturn and checking out Titan. So.
Yeah, we definitely need bases in the solar system. If we want to explore beyond Mars, we need some kind of like place to stop to pick up supplies or to rest for a while.
Yeah, definitely. So that's what I think. I think that we would need to actually create a presence on Mars.
All right. Well, that's a great segue to my answer, because my answer is a mission to Jupiter's moon Europa, because that is one of the places that theoretically we could actually go to and get something, because Europa is just one big ocean. There is more water on Europa than there is on the surface of the Earth. So we need water for things if we're going to explore the solar system, because you can make oxygen from water. You can make fuel from water. You can make a lot of things from water, and Europa has a crap load of it. So I think it would benefit us to go to Europa to see if we could mine the water to see if there's life, because there may be life underneath that ice on Europa. Stranger things have happened. So, definitely some kind of mission to Europa. I don't know if we could actually go to the surface, but maybe we could take some probes down and take an ice sample, see what the water's like, you know, check it out.
Jumping in the water's fine.
Yeah. do some swimming, do some snorkeling, you know. Who knows?
I'm sold.
But I definitely think that we need places to stop in the solar system if we're thinking about doing any more exploring, because there's all these asteroids that we could mine minerals. I mean, there's that Planetary Resources Company. They're going to go out and mine the asteroids for all this stuff that we can use to do exploring. So,
like unobtainium.
That's not real. What are you talking about?
Unobtainium, really?
It's a silly name. I have to throw it out there.
It is. That should be a rule on the podcast. Somebody should mention that at least once a show, once an episode.
No, no, we should forget it. It should be stricken from the record, sir. That is the point.
All right.
Well, then semi-unobtainium.
Oh, jeez.
Because obviously they were able to obtain it somehow.
There you go. All right, so that's going to do it pretty much for this episode of Time Traveling Robots in Space. If you have a comment on anything that we talked about tonight, we have a voicemail number. It is 805-328-3966. You can email us, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, and go to the website and subscribe to the podcast. You can either subscribe to TRIS, Time Traveling Robots in Space, or the Mega Feed, which will get you both this and the Alien Invasion, galacticnetcasts.com. All right, guys, you know you knew it was coming. Final thoughts before we take off. Paul. Hang on. I screwed up the order. Anessa's first.
Oh, so long and thanks for all the fish.
Nice.
Episode 42.
It is.
Yay!
That's a good one. I suppose I can go. Be excellent to each other.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.